Talk radio just got a little cooler.
Chad Benson.
Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
Hammer and Nigel in for Chad Benson, 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. My name is Nigel, that is Hammer right over there, and the headline out of the Washington Post, pretty jarring. Heroin deaths surpass gun homicides for the first time. Opioid deaths continue to surge in 2015, surpassing 30,000 for the first time in recent history. A grim milestone, Hammer. More people died from heroin-related causes than from gun homicides in 2015. As recently as 2007, gun homicides outnumbered heroin deaths by more than 5-1. And now, it's the exact opposite.
And it's certainly not because gun homicides have gone down. It's this tells you how bad the heroin epidemic is in the United States. And we can sit back and watch the news and see the House sit in for gun control, hear all these debates about gun control and this and that, but at the end of the day, the drug problem that's taking place in the United States right now is absolutely insane. And it doesn't matter what side of town you live on. You could live in the fanciest part of town, downtown, the east side, the hood, wherever you live. I promise you, there's meth, there's heroin, and it's out of control.
On the phone with us now is Scott Watson. He's an addiction and recovery specialist and a counselor at Heartland Intervention in Indianapolis. Scott, when you hear this headline, heroin deaths surpass gun homicides, does that surprise you at all?
It's not really a surprise. I think it was...
Oh, we lost Scott. That's all right. Okay. That's all right. We'll get Scott back on the line here. But it's a surprise to me. All you ever hear about... I will say this. I've interviewed Senator Joe Donnelly before, and the federal government is making funding more readily available for opioid addiction and families that are affected.
I still think this is very territorial, though. I think somebody sitting in the nice part of town that's got the good grocery store nearby, the good mall, doesn't think that this kind of stuff is taking place in their neighborhood. But we saw earlier this year that the biggest heroin ring in the country, one of the largest, was running from Chicago to Bloomington, Indiana. A small Midwestern Rust Belt city going up to Chicago.
Hey, man, addiction, it's no joke, and that's the severe understatement. I remember when I had deviated septum surgery last year. I was out of work for about 7 days. My nose was all messed up. I was on Vicodin pain pills for probably 7 to 10 days, and coming down off pills like that, I remember I felt like I had the flu after I stopped taking those pain pills. We're back with Scott Watson. He's an addiction and recovery specialist. Scott, sorry about the mix-up there. Again, the headline, heroin deaths surpassing gun homicides. Did that surprise you at all?
Not necessarily a surprise at all. It was only a few years ago that we learned that the number of opioid-related deaths had surpassed the number of deaths due to car accidents. It was interesting. Wow. In your intro, you mentioned the link between drugs and guns and the fact that we had more overdose deaths last year than gun homicide deaths. And the reality is there's an absolute link between the drug problem that we see both in suburbia and in the inner city and the drug and the gun situation, because oftentimes, certainly not always, but oftentimes gun violence is something that we see because people are either robbing to get money to buy drugs or their drug transactions that have gone sour, and that often involves gun violence. So one of the things when we talk from a policy standpoint with leaders, if we were to begin to get a better handle on the addiction issue, it would be the expectation that much crime would also see a decrease.
Scott, Jason Hammer here, and I'll be honest, I didn't know a lot about the heroin problem when I was growing up. I'm 39 years old, but when I first started hearing about heroin, I associated that drug with like Hollywood actors, movie stars, rock stars, people like Anthony Kiedis of the Chili Peppers. You had to have money to be hooked on heroin. It was the rich person's drug. Has that changed over the year, or was my perception always just incorrect about that?
Well, a little bit of both. It's certainly not the rich person's drug anymore. In fact, one of the reasons that many addicts, not all, turn to heroin is that heroin is much cheaper and largely easier to get then some of the pharmaceuticals like those opioid-based pain pills. So once someone has an addiction to pain pills, it becomes harder and way more expensive to continue to get the pain pills. Both the opium poppy, where heroin comes from, is similar in its construction even to some of the synthetic opiates, and heroin is largely easier to get and certainly a whole lot cheaper than those pain pills.
Scott Watson, addiction and recovery specialist, on the phone here with Hammer and Nigel. Scott, I mentioned this. We were trying to get you back on the phone. I had surgery last year, and I was on Vicodin for probably about 7 to 10 days. And once I start, and I'd never really been on pills like that before, once my prescription ran out, it felt like I had a severe kind of flu for a day or two. I can imagine somebody that's taken 30 or 40 of those pills a day feels 100 times worse trying to get off that, right?
Absolutely. And when you have a substantial addiction issue, or if you've been on them over a long period of time, you get off, you get what the drug addicts call dope sick. And so they basically, the body goes into withdrawal where it craves more of that. And if the addict isn't able to provide the body with that, then they get those flu-like symptoms, probably much, much worse than you got, where they have muscle cramping and nausea and vomiting and really a lot of mood disturbances, and it can be pretty uncomfortable. The thing to remember, though, as we talk about this, is yes, the drug problem is big and it's infiltrating parts of society that we haven't seen it before, but it's also important to always mention that recovery is also available. And so one of the things that we like to say is if we focus on the problem gets bigger. If we focus on the solution gets bigger. I think it's important that shows like yours talk about addiction and talk about the heroin problem, that try to normalize it not as an okay thing, but as a thing that cities and rural areas and families are dealing with all the time. But as part of that message, to also say, hey, we get that, and there's help and there's hope available, but you have to ask for it.
And Scott, you bring up a good point. Families deal with this wherever you go. We've all been to a restaurant or a gas station late at night, early in the morning, and have seen somebody on something, whether it's heroin, whether it's meth or some sort of device. You know, the loaded question, the million-dollar question is, how do you fix this? I don't know if more government intervention, so to speak, is the right way to go about this, more laws by the government. What's the best way to go about making things better in society?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on your political orientation and your policy orientation and a lot of things like that. I mean, I think the simple thing is to realize that for someone that's in the throes of addiction, recovery is available. And then I think from a societal standpoint, and this is going to sound kind of la-la land, but the reality is if we would just take better care of our children and there would be less childhood trauma and the families would stay together. And when families break up, if there was less violence that the kids were exposed to in a number of different ways, some of which is entertainment, if we were to raise healthier kids, then they would have more coping skills so that when they found themselves uncomfortable as adults, they might have a different coping skill rather than drugs and alcohol. That's kind of a panacea, a long-term goal. But the reality is for somebody that's in the – it's hard to talk about proper swimming technique to a drowning man. And so when you're in the middle of drowning in the throes of addiction, I think, you know, it's important that you be able to ask for help. I think it's important that when someone asks for help, they not get judged and a finger waved at them, but they get a medically appropriate detox if that's what they need, that people have access to treatment. Whether or not that has to happen from a private standpoint or a government standpoint, again, is something that the left and the right probably isn't going to agree on. But one thing that we can all agree on is that drugs absolutely are a scourge in families. It absolutely is a policy issue for elected officials, regardless of the policy, their political affiliation. And I think we also can agree that this is something that is going to have to be dealt with pretty quickly, because all of the evidence seems to indicate that short of that, the situation's only going to get worse.
Scott Watson, addiction and recovery specialist and also a counselor at Heartland Intervention. Scott, one more question here before we let you go. The prevalence of marijuana in this country, I feel like it's always been readily available, but now that you're seeing more and more states legalize marijuana, I want to get your perspective on what you think of marijuana, and is it, in your opinion, a gateway drug?
The short answer is I've never met a heroin addict that's not first tried marijuana. Having said that, not everybody that smokes marijuana is going to end up being a heroin addict. I do think there are certain populations for whom marijuana in any level is inappropriate. Anyone with an addiction issue, absolutely, if they, let's say you're a recovering heroin addict, if you smoke marijuana, there is a vastly higher likelihood that you're going to end up doing heroin again. If you are a pilot or a surgeon, I want you completely sober, not just sober on legal marijuana. And so there are those that are in safety-sensitive functions, and the expectation would be that they would not partake in those drugs recreationally, even when they're legal. And there are DOT guidelines in place that, you know, that help to assure that. There are some people that can drink responsibly. There are some people that can use different types of substances fairly responsibly, assuming that they're legal in whatever community you're in. And then there are other people that simply can't. Just like there are some people that left to their own devices seem to drift a little bit morally northward, and then there are those of us that left to our own devices seem to never drift morally northward.
Scott, you mentioned there is help also readily available in this country. What if somebody's listening right now and they want to get right, they want to get rid of drugs and their addictions, what do you suggest? Where can you go? Do you have, I mean, I know you're at the Heartland Intervention in Indianapolis. What can somebody do?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends, sadly, on your financial situation. If you're someone that has financial means and commercial health insurance, then it's going to be easier. But for even those people that are down and out, that are struggling, that have run through their money, there certainly are community-based programs in almost every county in America that has a community mental health center or a community addiction center. And I think that's a good first place to reach out to if you don't have anywhere else to turn. I would hope that we live in a day and in an age where most primary care physicians or emergency departments, even in rural areas, would be able to point someone to medically appropriate treatment. The message is, don't give up. Try to be honest about where you're at and ask and say those three really tough words, I need help.
Scott Watson, addiction and recovery specialist. The Twitter handle is at SJWREF. Scott, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for calling into the show.
Appreciate it. I'm a fun handle. Not only will you get addiction and recovery tweets, but you'll get a whole lot about bluegrass music.
All right. Okay, excellent.
There
All
we
right.
go. All right.
Thank you, Scott. At SJWREF, Scott Watson there, an addiction and recovery specialist. Again, the headline hammer, heroin deaths surpassing gun homicides. Pretty jarring.
And our producer, Phil, sent this statistic over to me. This tells you all you need to know, because this is happening everywhere, Midwest, East, South, in the state of Ohio, in the heart of, you know, the Midwest. Ohio's opiate addicts would make up the fifth largest city in the state.
Wow. Whoa. Say that again.
The opiate addicts in Ohio would make up the fifth largest city in that state.
Wow.
And that's a state with Cleveland, you know, Cincinnati, Columbus.
Coming up next, Hammer, why did the Russian embassy tweet out a picture of a duck? That's the Hammer and Nigel Show, in for Chad Benson.
Now, let's get this party started.
Obviously.
I feel exactly the same way, but the opposite.
This is the Chad Benson Show.
Hammer and Nigel in for Chad Benson tonight, 844-DIG-CHAD, the phone number, at Chad Benson Show, the Twitter handle. I'm Nigel, and Hammer, the Obama administration laid the hammer down on the Russians today. Did you see this?
What happened?
Hey, man. They laid some sanctions down on the Russians for the email hacking thing. I guess it's a retaliation of sorts. They expelled 35 Russian diplomats. They're out of here. Sanctions against the Russian military intelligence services, a spy agency that succeeded the KGB, which is the FSB. And this is really bizarre. I didn't even know the U.S. shut down two compounds, one in Maryland and one in New York, used by Russian personnel for intelligence-related purposes. To get a little more specific, they own recreational compounds in Maryland and Long Island.
That's where they train their boxers to fight Rocky.
I don't think so, but as of noon tomorrow, the U.S. is barring all Russian access to the two Moscow-owned compounds that they actually bought and paid for. They're not allowed to go back there anymore. I don't understand what Russia's doing with compounds in Maryland and Long Island anyway, but they're not allowed back. They paid for it.
This reeks of Scrappy-Doo to me. And if you remember cartoons growing up, there was Scooby-Doo, and then there was the itty-bitty little baby dog Scrappy-Doo, the little one that always was ready to scrap and ready to fight. This is where we're at with the Obama administration right now. For basically 8 years, they've cowered and shied away from the Russians, wanted no part of any conflict, and now, just over 20 days to go until they're checking out, now they're trying to be Billy Badass.
Here's what the Russian embassy tweeted out. This is Russian at Russian embassy, verified account. Here's what they tweeted out. President Obama expels 35 Russian diplomats in Cold War deja vu, as everybody, including American people, will be glad to see the last of this hapless administration. And as if that were bad enough, along with that tweet from the Russian embassy, they attached a picture of a little duckling with the words lame across it.
We sent that out on our Twitter. If you want to see that, follow us on our Twitter account, at Hammer and Nigel, all one word. I have a hard time thinking back to the Cold War, Nige, that, you know, between Russia and the United States and Ronald Reagan and all the stuff going on, that years from that point, there'd be a tweet about a cute little duck that would cause panties to get wadded.
Apparently, Donald Trump isn't the only one with a Twitter account out there as far as, you know, high-ranking officials are concerned, presidential. That was out of the Russian embassy.
You think of Russians, you think of big, strong, the sickle, the hammer, the communist bloc, the Reds, and now they're sending out cute little duckling pictures with the word lame on it. And I guess this is shots fired.
My perception of Trump, though, is that everything that he said, everything that he's tweeted out, he wants to be friends with the Russians. And I have the feeling anyway that maybe he's already sent Putin a text or something like that saying, hey, look, just give me 20 days. I'll take care of this. Don't worry about it.
Right. Go on vacation. Go ride some horses without your shirt on. Go do your thing. And then we'll get down to business when the big man steps into the office.
Coming up, Hammer and I severely disagree on something. We'd like to get your input. More on that next. The Hammer and Nigel Show, in for Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.
People try to fake this, but back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'm a lad, I'm understanding.
There's a reason why we're playing a selection from Death Row Records. We'll get to that in a second. The Hammer and Nigel Show, we're in for Chad Benson. Chad back next week. Just keeping it warm for him, man. Don't worry, he'll be back. Hammer, what? There's something happening in the military for the first time since when? 50?
Yeah, we're getting ready for the first United States military execution in over 50 years.
Wow.
Sometime in the next 30 days, we should have a date set. A former U.S. Army soldier who has been on death row since 1988 for a grisly rape and murder is now facing execution after a judge denied his bid for another stay of execution. This would be the first military-based execution in over 50 years.
How do they do it?
It's lethal injection. It's the same as most states that have the death penalty. It is lethal injection, but they do their own thing.
Yeah, I didn't know that was different since it was in the military or something. You know, firing it up.
Yeah,
old
guy
Sparky
that's,
or
firing squad hangings. The guy that's getting ready to be executed is one of six former servicemen currently on military death row. And the most recent addition came back in 2009 with a 13-count, 32 attempted murders.
So 1988, this guy, they've been feeding this guy since 1988. He's been on death row that long, and we're just now getting around to, giving him the needle.
I've talked about this for a long time. When I become the president of the United States, Stop laughing. Yeah. There's got to be a way you can speed up this process to get rid of some of these people that are just sitting on death row, getting fed. You know, taxpayers are paying for some of these people to stay on death row.
Probably playing video games, right. Reading books, relaxing.
Watching the coverage of the upcoming execution they may be a part of. There has to be some sort of way. And I'm not smart enough to figure it out. Maybe somebody out there listening is, to speed up the process of these executions. And maybe I'm the bad guy here. All right?
I'm quite sure you are.
But you know what? Put these things on television, too. I'm down, completely down, for pay-per-view executions where the money goes to the victim's family. Think about that for a minute. Something good could come out of this for the family, and there's one less bad guy breathing my oxygen. I like it when bad guys die, and the more bad guys we can kill, and the more money we can raise for the good people, I don't see a problem in that.
I'm sorry. Are you calling for a public execution?
Pay-per-view executions.
It's public.
There's a market for it. I promise you there's a market for it.
Tad barbaric, don't you think? You know what else they do, public executions? Saudi Arabia.
You know where they
have.
Do you
want to be? Do you know? I'm at. What was that?
Roll on one.
Do you want to be on par? Do you want to be on the same level with those guys over in Saudi Arabia? Those public.
You mean the people like in Singapore that have low crime rates and public floggings? I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that completely. Remember the Michael Fay kid that went down to Singapore, acted like a fool, and got caned publicly?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that this week.
Yeah, and guess what Singapore has? An incredibly low crime rate. I'm all right with this. I think there's a market for it. Just because you have a problem with it doesn't mean that other people would not want to watch this and put some money toward the family.
I definitely would never want to watch an execution. Maybe if I was affected by somebody that was going into the chamber, maybe if I was, you know, a family member, yeah, maybe I'd see it then. That's a little barbaric for me. Just go to, you know, type in Saudi Arabia executions on YouTube and just tell me if you want that kind of thing happening in this country.
But when you see that, how many views do you see on those? I bet there's a lot. And if a fraction of that would create money to go to the family, why is that bad? So you're going to tell me if an officer of the law is gunned down by a bad guy, that guy's getting ready to get executed, the money raised by televising that execution could put that kid's,
okay.
You know,
I mean, I
the
guess,
kid through
yeah.
college.
There's probably other ways of going and raising money to send his kid through college. I'm just saying a public execution's a little barbaric, a little like we're not Neanderthals here. We're a civilized society. You're not going to take somebody out back and, you know, put them in the.
You're calling people Neanderthals that like to see bad people die. I like it, and I'm going to use a Midwestern term here. I like it when bad guys have their comeuppance.
Okay, I'm not saying I don't want to see the bad guys, the really. Talk about this guy again that's getting executed. He's been on death row since 1988. It's a military. The last military execution, Phil, our producer Phil, just sent this to me. The last military execution 50 years ago was a hanging.
They didn't play back in the day.
No.
And society, I think, was better back in the day. So I want to open this up on Twitter right now. And I understand that I'm probably going to be bombarded with people calling me evil and awful. But I bet there's a lot of people out there like myself that would pay money for a good cause. Not just for anything. Not to a corporate sponsor or anything like that. If the money went to the victim's family, I would pay to watch an execution.
The you know Twitter what? Handle. At, go ahead, Phil.
It shouldn't be GoFundMe. It should be Go Kill Me.
Yes.
Of course. You can tweet at us at Hammer and Nigel. My name's Nigel, and that's Hammer over there. And Hammer, I'm not saying I'm against the death penalty. I'm very pro-death penalty.
I wish it would happen more.
I do. I think it's absurd that these guys that are obviously guilty have been on death row for years. And, yeah, this guy that's – what's his name?
I don't want to say his name. I don't want to give him credit for anything, but he was convicted for a grisly rape and murder.
Absolutely. He should have been dead long ago, but involving television cameras and crowds and are you going to tailgate? Are you going to tailgate the execution?
I might have friends over. We might have some beers to watch a bad guy die. And again, just because it offends you, and this is kind of what we found out during the election cycle, so many people were offended by something They wanted it to be true for everybody. I understand you don't want to watch a pay-per-view execution. Good for you. I'm glad you've got the moral high ground. I, on the other hand, want to crack open a PBR tall boy, watch some scumbag get some justice, and some money go to the family.
I'd like to get. I'd like for our producer, Phil McGeehan, to weigh in on this. Phil, where do you stand?
I'm wondering if he'll go out at 2 o'clock in the morning and dump himself a beer shower.
Oh, God.
That's only for Cub World Series championships, which in my lifetime and most everybody's has only been one.
Yeah, when the Cubs won the World Series this year, Hammer went outside by himself in his underpants and dumped beer all over him.
But no, so seriously, I want to open this up on Twitter because I think there are a lot of people like myself that are a little twisted on the inside. I admit that. But they want to see justice and money go to a great cause. Tweet at us right now at Hammer and Nigel. It's all one word, at Hammer and Nigel. If it's not your cup of tea, fine. Don't buy the pay-per-view. But there's a lot of people in this country that are fascinated by death. They like violence. They like to see justice being served. And I
like to see justice being served. I just don't like to see justice being served, if that makes any sense.
Then don't buy it. But why should I get denied because you're offended by it? At Hammer and Nigel on Twitter.
Look, I'm just saying, it's on par with what happens in some of these Middle Eastern countries. That's their society, the public executions, the hangings, the beheadings. A pay-per-view public execution where people can go spend $60, and it's not like a joyous occasion. I mean, you have also families are involved. And I just don't see it. I think it's actually kind of absurd.
Look, I'm not saying this is ever going to happen, all right? It's never going to happen, but think of all the money people pump into pay-per-view events every year. I got suckered into paying over $100 to watch a horrible fight between Mayweather and Pacquiao. Do you think I would pay money to watch somebody where there would absolutely be a resolution at the end of the night? Hell yes, I would.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, here's the thing about a pay-per-view execution, because look at the YouTube generation that we have right now. Is it, you know, they will do some heinous things knowing they will get the death penalty and knowing that they will be famous for 15 minutes because their stuff's going to be televised all over the world.
Good point.
That's a good point. But again, I'm going into if this creates money for the grieving family. I am completely all right with that. And I think there are enough people like myself that would be willing to put in $50, $60, $75 a pop for a good cause to watch a bad guy leave the earth.
You mentioned the UFC, Ronda Rousey possibly fighting her last fight tomorrow night against Nunes?
Amanda Nunes. Yeah.
How much did you pay for that Pacquiao fight again?
It was over $100. And then after the fact, you find out Pacquiao had an injured shoulder. And,
I went to Buffalo Wild Wings, watched it for free.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that probably would have been a better idea.
Yeah, but how much did you spend on beer that night?
Yeah, I was going to say, Phil's a heavy drinker. He probably spent $100 on beer. Coming up next, what Carson Wentz from the Philadelphia Eagles bought his offensive lineman for a Christmas gift, for a teammate's gift. We'll get to that next. A Hammer and Nigel show, in for Chad Benson.
Oh, yeah. I'm already hooked.
And we're just getting started.
Whoop-dee-doo!
This is the Chad Benson Show.
Hammer and Nigel in for Chad Benson tonight. At Chad Benson Show, the Twitter handle, 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423. I'm Nigel. Hammer, what do you got over there?
We've been talking about some statistics, you know, all night long. As you get close to the end of the year, you find a lot of disturbing things out earlier. You know, we were talking about the heroin epidemic. Well, this past year was also a horrific year for members of the United States law enforcement. The United States recorded the highest number of officer fatalities in the last 5 years. In 2016, 135 police officers were killed in the line of duty. That is the highest number in 5 years. The state of Texas lost the most. 17 officers, followed by California with 10.
Well, I certainly, look, that's, man, that's an awful statistic. And I, you know, my late uncle was a state trooper, lost his life in the, while he was on duty in the early 80s. So my family obviously knows what it's like to lose somebody while they're in the line of duty. And it's a, boy, it's, you know, you suit up, you put your bulletproof vest on, you put your, you know, you put all your, put
all
your gun
gear
on, all your gear on, and you just never know if you're coming back, you know. And it's, you just got to stand up, and every time you see an officer, just shake his hand and say thank you, because that stat right there is just makes the heart sink a little bit.
And you wonder how many people that are growing up today, coming out of high school, coming out of college, even want to get into law enforcement now. When you look at what's transpired over the last couple of years with the BLM movement, with the F the police sentiments, you see it's so many protests. You saw what happened in Dallas. You saw what happened in cities all over America. What's the motivation for somebody other than just a paycheck to get into law enforcement?
Well, I think I can only hope that it causes more people to, okay, you know, for instance, when 9/11 hit, military enlistment went way up after 9/11. And I can only hope that, you know, there are people that want to be police officers every day out there and go up and protect and serve.
And if you're listening to this program right now, if you are an officer, if you've got somebody you love that is an officer, thank you. Tell them thank you. We're on your side. We got your back. Another story I wanted to talk to you about, Nige. It kind of has a gun angle to it a little bit. You know how in the NFL, if you're a starting quarterback, at the end of the year, it's kind of a rite of passage that you get your offensive linemen kind of an end-of-the-season gift just as a way to say thank you for protecting you throughout the course of the year, right?
Didn't Dan Marino buy his offensive line isotoner gloves?
He bought them all isotoners. It was a different time back then South Beach.
Like Peyton Manning bought the Colts offensive line each like their own $12,000 Rolex.
Right. Tony Romo took the Cowboys linemen to like a trip to Cancun, I think, once. This brings us to Philadelphia. Rookie quarterback Carson Wentz getting ready to wrap up his first season in the NFL. One more game to go. Eagles sitting at 6-9. Bought all of his offensive linemen guns as a thank you gift.
What kind of guns?
This wasn't just any gun. The shotguns that were purchased by Carson Wentz were engraved with each player's number on the butt of the weapon, and it's a Beretta Silver Pigeon, over $2,000 a piece.
I'm going to have to type that in here.
Now,
Beretta. What'd he say? What'd you say? Oh, Greg? Oh, we have a caller. Okay, Greg, hello. Hammer and Nigel.
Hey, current administration is responsible for both the drug problem and the police, the issue with so many police officers being shot. Let's see, I said that's one of the, his name escaped me and it's bugging me, but I sat down with the elected leaders here.
Yeah, we're losing Greg there.
Yeah, Greg, your phone's kind of breaking up on us. I kind of see where you're going with that, and you're right. The Obama administration has not been real friendly to officers of the law. And you go back to this past year's Democratic convention. They brought up the family members of people that had fired shots at law officers. And that's all you need to know about that. And I agree with you 100%. And feel free to tweet back at us your thoughts, and maybe we can retweet that at Hammer and Nigel. But to finish up this discussion we were having about Carson Wentz, bought all of his offensive linemen guns engraved as their end-of-the-year gift.
And Twitter's going crazy with that.
Oh, the poor kids. I can't believe your quarterback's buying guns. What's my son and daughter supposed to think seeing guns?
What was that one tweet you were telling me about? It's the first time.
An Eagles fan tweeted, well, at least this is the first time the Eagles have had weapons.
Offensive weapons.
Offensive weapons.
I don't know. Probably, maybe could have chosen a better gift.
But here's the thing.
You know, I don't know.
He wanted the gift to be personal. He went hunting with a lot of the guys during their bye week. Carson Wentz is a big hunter. So they went out in the woods. They did the hunting thing. He went out with his linemen. So the gift makes sense. It wasn't like, what the hell, I'm going to buy these guns and boom goes the dynamite. It makes sense. The linemen all seem to like it. The only people that don't are the poor, pitiful children people. And Shira Goodman, the executive director of Ceasefire PA, expressed some concern because the Eagles the last couple of years have had some problems with guns and other events. Someone tried to take a loaded gun in a backpack through the airport. There have been a few domestic issues with guns. But that was before Carson Wentz's time.
If you were a quarterback in the NFL, what would you buy your offensive line?
I think it depends on what they're into. You know, you kind of know what the group is into. A trip, you can never go wrong with a trip.
I wonder if any quarterbacks have bought their offensive line cars.
I don't know. Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, those are the top-of-the-line guys that would do it. And normally it's either all-expense-paid trip to some sort of tropical paradise, these ridiculous over-the-top Rolex watches, things like that.
I mean, those Rolex watches, I mentioned that Peyton Manning bought his offensive line like $12,000. I'm sure they were worth more. They're probably more like $25,000 Rolex watches. He could afford it. Rumors that Peyton Manning might want a piece of the Colts.
Rumors.
Yeah.
Rumors.
All right. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. In for Chad Benson.
The Chad Benson Show.